Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Some recent developments this past week with the Senate confirming Kash Patel to head the FBI. And then on the heels of that, Dan Bongino. I know Dan when he was a U.S. Senate candidate from here in Maryland, and couldn't make it work here, and then moved elsewhere, and is now, you know, had become this great podcast, conservative right wing, hard right ass kind of podcasters spewing all kinds of bullshit. And now he's the number two FBI with no law enforcement experience. Oh, yes, he was a cop, I think, at some point, or worked in that space, but certainly was a Secret Service agent, which is not the same as an FBI agent, just for the record, people understand. What does that confirmation say to folks out there who are out there trying to do the right thing about regarding what happened on January 6th? And how should Americans be looking at this new version of the FBI?
I mean, a lot of, you know, obviously the individuals who worked on January 6th cases feel really targeted, and that's because they were targeted explicitly by the new administration. Soon after they came in, right, on the Justice Department side, you saw a number of firings of prosecutors who worked on these January 6th cases. On the FBI side, you had the acting Deputy Attorney General of the United States demand a list of all of these individuals at the FBI who worked on these January 6th cases. And I think what happened there was they didn't realize just how large that group was. We could have seen some firings very early on if this was a smaller group, but there were so many people who worked on these January 6th cases, because you're talking about arrests that happened all over the country. You're talking about cases that were worked by field offices all over the country, often working in conjunction with DC, with the Washington field office of the FBI. But the numbers were just huge. And I don't, you know, there was, if you fired that many FBI agents, you would basically be killing the FBI. And then there was the question of whether the probationary employees were ever going to get hired. So, right. I mean, overall, it's just been the biggest, you know, it's been the most chaos within the FBI that I've seen in my entire career. And I think historically that we've really seen since Watergate. There's just this tremendous pressure that the FBI is under, and the direct politicization of the FBI itself, and the deputy. Choice of Dan Bongino, I think, is definitely another real shakeup for the Bureau. But, you know, I should say there are definitely components of the Bureau that are kind of psyched about this and happy about that, because they are supportive of that sort of mission from, you know, that sort of right-wing mission. They just agree with the politics of Kash Patel, of Dan Bongino. There was a memo
Be clear. They view the institution they're working for, and they believe that the institution that they have been a part of should be shut down and made into a museum, a January 6th museum. So you know what? To that FBI, just quit the damn job. Yeah. Because if you can't quit the job, that means you have an agenda that is not consistent with the oath you took and is not in alignment with the values of the country. I hear what you're saying, Ryan, and I know that that's in fact the case from the work I'm doing in the democracy space. We get these reports all the time about the infiltration of this right-wing MAGA bullshit inside our law enforcement, inside of our military, and since out of a lot of institutions in national security. So the screwing of this country is happening internally as much as externally. When you have people who hold these ideologies working in these jobs and are now applauding the fact that someone like a Kash Patel is going to be running the organization, I wonder if they'll feel that way the day they're told don't come to work the next day.
Yeah, you know, I think there there was a lot of tension between the Bureau and some of the field offices, right? Or the rather the headquarters in DC and some of the field offices. But I do think that that is softened now, and there's a little bit more unity since this sort of attack on so much of the FBI. Because, you know, while there might be disagreements about how the January 6th caseload was handled, and listen, there are reasonable points to be made. I think one of them, just because the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office didn't realize how many people went inside the Capitol, that they probably went broader than they really could have logically gotten, you know, prosecuted in the course of 5 years, because they thought this was like 800 people entered the Capitol when it was really upwards of 3,500 people, which is just not an amount that they could ever get.
I just see that from watching TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but you know, like, it took them a while to figure that out, and that was really driven by the sleuths, right?
Like, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know, is it 800 or is it 3,000? I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay, I'll pull myself together. Go ahead.
No, there were some, you know, there were mistakes that were made early on, and you know, I think that like but we have seen, I think, since all of this and since this these sort of open attacks on the FBI, a little bit more, you know, cohesion, I think, between the field. And, you know, I think even people who are skeptical of these cases, something that often seemed to happen that I've heard a lot about from former prosecutors often who worked on these cases, is that some of the FBI agents weren't so enthusiastic about it. And then once they saw all the evidence in these cases, they recognized why this was such a serious thing for democracy, you know, because it all depended on the filtered bubble that they were getting their news through. And like, that's how serious they thought January 6th was. And I just think there's people who still haven't seen the most awful footage of January 6th that will never pierce their little bubble, because all they see is sort of the, you know, the calmer footage from that day.
Well, I think we should. Well, we can't expect it under this administration. You know, I don't know if the Democrats in Congress or other third party, you know, democracy oriented organizations have access to it. But yeah, it should be shown. It should be shown as a primetime special, you know, the truth about January 6th, and just show it. Just let it unfold like a TikTok, like we've seen with the JFK assassinations and so forth, you know, just sort of, you know, frame by frame, so that Americans will actually begin to understand that this was not a normal day at the U.S. Capitol, and that, in fact, there were probably some members of that body who had a finger or a pinky toe in it. And there were certainly those that outside of Washington who played a key role in orchestrating what unfolded. And I think that those stories are important to tell. Someone like a Denver Riggleman, former congressman from Virginia, and others who served on the committee, you know, these folks can put like a spotlight on this, you know, an Adam Kinzinger. I don't know how much Liz Cheney would, but, you know, it doesn't matter. There are other people who can, to your point, tell that narrative the way you have in this book, to sort of lay out through the eyes and the efforts of sedition hunters, how they were able to actually give clarity and shape to what unfolded that day. The masked faces unmasked, the hidden silhouetted figure with a spotlight on it. And that is the strength of this book that you've written, I think, in so many ways, for folks to really kind of get, you know, a clearer understanding of what happened there. But just, you know, as we were talking about the Kansas story, just seeing the other related parts of this that weren't just specifically dialed in on January 6th, but going back 4 or 5 years, how these elements started to raise up and connect themselves, connecting their own dots. A lot of this happened on Facebook back in the day, right? A lot of these group chats are like, oh yeah, yeah, you make sure you bring this and don't forget the you know, the bear spray and you know, sort of the telling real side of it. You know?
Yeah. A lot of people telling on themselves.
yeah. What is it about, I mean, just to stay on this a little bit, because it is going to be such a profound impact on so many people in this town and around the country. What Who is Kash Patel in the context of this story?
And I mean, so Kash Patel, I think, is someone who spread some conspiracy theories about January 6th. I think that, you know, he was willing to engage in a lot of this narrative that was, you know, was something that would get him a lot of attention, right? And I think that was the question that I think still is the question today about Kash Patel, is how much of this was just the persona that he took on for, you know, sort of the podcast bro persona, and how much of this did he really believe, right? He's someone who accused the FBI or suggested that the FBI was somehow involved in this, in like January 6th, right? Talking about informants being involved. He talked about that on podcasts before. Dan Bongino, you've also had a lot of stuff about the pipe bomber, right? So throwing a lot of suspicions around about the FBI being involved there. So I think that is really what we could see in this next step, because they're not going to be able to, spoiler alert, they're not going to be able to find out that, like, oh, the FBI was behind these bombs, or that, like, oh, the FBI was responsible for January 6th, because it's like ridiculous on its face. The FBI isn't capable of pulling that off, even if they wanted to, I think is the best way to sort of think of this, right? Like, that's a caper, right? Like, just think of the line item that you'd have to have for, like, the procurement form for, you know, some FBI office. It's like, oh, one bucket of red face paint, and then, like, you know, 40 MAGA hats. Like, it's just so ridiculous. Like, and like, so I think that's the way to think of it. But they're going to have to find something to sort of satisfy that narrative that they've already thrown out there, right? They're going to have to show something. And I think that what probably we're going to end up seeing is a situation where they find some targets and they zero in on them, and they just, like, go after them really aggressively and continue to try to undermine the narrative about what happened on January 6th.
Again, folks, the book is a compelling story about January 6th, yes, and the sedition hunters who really did some incredible sleuthing, but also a little bit more than that, and I don't want you to lose sight of that. And I want to sort of zero in on one aspect of this that I thought was interesting, and it's really kind of telling, and it kind of goes to what we were saying about the FBI and Kash Patel and, the DOJ and Pam Bondi and all of these Trump acolytes now in charge of these institutions like DOJ, like FBI. I note in here where you lay out talking about the federal laws that were violated on January 6th had, you know, these 5-year statute of limitations, and you kind of go through this whole series of things. And you talk about the 100 riders who were featured on the FBI's Capital Violence webpage. And you note, quote, this presumably from the webpage, the Department of Justice's resolve to hold accountable those who committed crimes on January 6, 2021 has not and will not wane. How true is that?
Not true anymore. I mean, it's very much so waned. I think, you know, now we have a situation where it's investigating the investigators, and people who prosecuted these crimes are being targeted, in some cases forced out of the FBI. And I think it's a clear message that that they're trying to send to try to rewrite the clear truth about what happened that day. And it's just, you know, it's indisputable. You know, you had mentioned sort of, you know, it would be great if everyone could see this footage. If you were to sit someone down to watch all of the footage from January 6th, even if you didn't sleep, it would take you over a year, right? Mm-hmm. There's just so much evidence of January 6th and really just awful, brutal attacks on law enforcement. But it has sort of become, I think, a choose your own adventure scenario that people are sort of telling the story about January 6th that they want, you know, to be told, or trying to change it in a way and showing the calmer footage, or, you know, picking someone that you can sort of make a victim of you can portray as a victim of the deep state or of the government or of, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. what have you. And, you know, I think that that's what I'm just going to sort of, you know, be focused on going forward is, you know, there's going to be continued fallout from the events of January 6th. January 6th story is not over. The January 6th story is something that fundamentally changed our country, and is continuing to change and shape, things going forward. It is this major breaking point in American democracy.
Hi, I'm John Fugelsang.
And I'm Professor Corey Brettschneider.
And we are here to tell you about The Oath and the Office, an essential new podcast about the extremely strange times we find ourselves in.
In the first few seconds in office, the President of the United States is required to take an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And we're going to hold him to that pledge, despite the fact that he has threatened democracy and even the law itself.
It's all about hope for what democracy should look like and getting real about what our democracy does look like from an esteemed constitutional scholar and a deeply unqualified comedian.
Subscribe to The Oath in the Office wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.